known in the carnival industry as walkthroughs. Walkthroughs include those fun houses, horror houses, tunnels of love, etc. These particular devices, as they are identified in the bill, do present a distinct hazard if they're not constructed properly, do not have safe ingress and egress, and appropriate electrical
proposed amendments to 2359. Let me explain what it is. First of all, 2359 is a bill that would have originally repealed a required statement transferring title and real property. The House amended it to May 27th, and these are the amendments that you want to start with. The May 27th House amendments to House Bill 2359. The committee talked about making an amendment on line 8 because of the language before signing this instrument, because all instruments aren't necessarily signed. In addition to that, we have proposed amendments by the bar dated June 12, 1985, and they propose in line 8 of the printed House amendments, after signing, inserting "or accepting." In line 16, after executed, inserting "or accepted." In line 17, after the period, inserting the language, "No action may be maintained by the person acquiring or agreeing to acquire title to the real property against any person other than the person transferring or contracting to transfer fee title to the real property." And there is somebody from the bar if you want an explanation of why they want those amendments.
Well, since Diane has waited 3 days for this bill to come up, I suppose we can call on her. Come up here and tell us.
If you don't want to hear, I'm perfectly willing to waive testimony at this point.
Providing we pass it.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Diana Godwin from Portland, representing the Oregon State Bar. I'll talk fast. These two amendments, first one, line 8 and line 16, are in response to what the chairman wanted to do, because not all instruments are signed. Some are accepted by the grantee. And then the new sentence that we're going to add at the end of this bill was worked out compromise language between the bar's real estate and land use section, which is sponsoring this bill, the title company's thousand friends, and lending institutions, to ensure that if there is a suit brought because this warning is not made, that the suit can only go against the person who transfers the title and not anybody else who is an intermediary or loans money. Any questions?
I see. So I suppose potentially there could be a case brought against the escrow agent or
the lender, where the seller of the property who initially omitted to put in that warning has disappeared or is not can't be found to bring suit. We just want to clarify, the only person you can bring suit against is your seller who transferred a title and omitted that warning. But you can only bring it, as you see under the new language of the bill, you can only bring it if you, the buyer, would not have acquired the property or would not have executed the instrument but for the fact that that warning was not made. That had the warning been made, you would not have entered into the transaction. That's the only circumstances under which you can bring a lawsuit under this.
Question,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Simmons.
While we're waiting for a quorum,
yeah.
But I do have a question. There's no date that this becomes effective. Does 90 days give time enough for Stevens Nest, for example, to reprint all of their forms? And what notification, how will Joe Blow, who wants to give a deed to a piece of property that isn't worth very much to his neighbor, how will he be aware of this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Simmons That's a good question. The title companies are all aware of this, so they'll be including it. The lending institutions, as represented by the lobby, will be informed. The Bar Association publishes a comprehensive book of all new legislation alerting their members to these changes. The real estate and land use section of the bar, which particularly deals with this, of course, is sponsoring this bill and will get the word out. I suppose it's the same problem whenever we change something in the statutes which requires a revision of a standard form. We are all geared up to let our people know.
Well, unfortunately, or fortunately as the case may be, few people transfer property without going to an attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand.
Would you envision that the county clerk would refuse to accept an instrument that does not have this in it? Although sub 2 does say no action may be maintained against the county recording officer for a recording instrument that does not contain it.
No, I would not envision having the county clerks refuse this. But as you can see from this bill, in the instance that you mentioned where a person is not using a lawyer, is not using a title company, but goes ahead and transfers title, but does not include this new language, under subsection 3 of this bill, they're not going to be liable for deleting that, and they're not subject to suit unless the person to whom they transfer the property can prove that they would not have entered into that transaction if that warning had been there. So you've got a protection so that the mere absence of that warning is not going to give rise to liability on the part of somebody, say, who, as you say, it doesn't see a lawyer and inadvertently omits the warning. But I know that I'm aware that publishing companies like Stevens Ness are aware and watch for these things, and they do have 90 days.
No.
They're normally geared up for this kind of thing.
You've got two or three sitting in your desk.
That's great.
Old forms.
Usually it's lawyers that have those forms in their file, that's up to the bar.
I happen to have a few in my file. Mm-hmm. And I'm not I bring it up, I guess, really to make a record to say that the clerk will still accept them without it, and probably no one is harmed by it in most cases that I'm thinking about.
Yeah. They're currently authorized to accept them without the statement, and again, the law protects them. No action can be maintained against the county clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on this? Well, the chair would move the amendments, state bar amendments, dated June 12, 1985.
As long as Ms. Godwin was here, we had to make her earn her fee anyway.
I've
earned
it. You can't be out here today.
Any objection? It's so ordered. And the chair will move that the bill be further amended on line 9 after the comma following instrument by the insertion of the following words, or accepting its delivery, comma.
Probably put in or accepting these amendments, put in or accepting after before signing or accepting in line 8.
Oh, line 8?
Yeah, so it says before signing or accepting this instrument.
Before signing or accepting this instrument. Okay, I will look that, so that's not necessary. My amendment is
right. Necessary.
All right.
Well, did we move it? Did we move these amendments?
Yes. We didn't move them. I asked if there's any objection.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was asleep.
Yeah. Okay, well, is it ready now?
Yes.
Okay. Chair will move.
Again, the June 12th amendments.
The June 12th amendments are now in the bill.
That's what should have been.
Right. Are now in the bill. And so, the chair will move the bill, 2359, as amended, to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Rockman.
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Vaughn?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye. That's carried. Well, we really ought to keep Mr. Barrows here all night long, but I know that he's been waiting ever since 8:30 this morning with this 2667, and so he might as well find out now what we're going to do with it.
You didn't hear the announcement I made when there was nobody here but me of the committee that after we got all through that Mr. Barrows was going to take us all out for a steak dinner.
I thought that was a good suggestion. And maybe if Well, see, how should we handle that so he could do that for us? We could keep him from going to dinner until the very last.
What does that have to do with lobbying? It's 20 cents a mile and $10 an hour.
Might be slightly illegal. What's the number of that?
2667.
Thank you.
We had, were you here this morning on that, Senator Cohen?
No.
Well, I gave Mr. Barrows a very thorough interrogation on what he was trying to get at here, because I think the bill is not, in fact, Bill Love was in the audience. He drafted this bill, and I was quite critical of the drafting job on this bill and attributed it to the fact that it was done by a lawyer who doesn't know anything about court procedures or
did
subpoenas.
You have you had a few minutes to change it? Mr. Chairman?
No, we didn't want to. I didn't think was. It's either not worth changing at all, and or we either shouldn't change it at all, or we should just let it croak, I guess, because I think we established a pretty adequate record, and what the record demonstrates is that when the bank gets handed the $5 check. And the subpoena deuces taken for all these hundreds of pages of records to show up in court at a certain time, it's going to have to be there. This bill is not going to get the operations officer of the bank off the hook or require immediate payment for these costs of copying and so forth. They've got to show up in court with the records as demanded by the subpoena, but they are entitled to the costs, and they have to worry about how they're going to collect the costs from the person. But I can say I personally subpoenaed bank records on numerous occasions, and oftentimes they are voluminous, and there is an expense there, and so I suppose that the litigant should pay that expense. So I don't mind, as long as we've got a clear record that the they don't get paid this money in advance for their appearance in court, unless it's agreed to. Do you have some problems with that, Senator Cohen?
No.
All right.
Move the bill.
Senator Simmons moves House Bill 2667 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Campbell?
Aye.
Aye.
It's carried. Now, if the sponsor of the bill were smart, he might stick around because we might have more members show up and somebody will vote to reconsider this. But I'll leave it up to the sponsor.
I wouldn't move.
I'll leave it up to the sponsor. Well, let's see. Let's go to 2361 now. Says everyone supports, and I don't know why I wrote that on there. That must mean that I don't think that meant the committee members. I think it meant the people who were interested in the bill.
You're getting genuinely jolly, Mr. Chair. That's the import you ways and means.
Can I make a quick explanation?
Yes, Counsel, do you have a further explanation you want to give?
Basically, this is a bill that deals with specific remedies in land sale contract defaults and rights of subordinate lien holders and an Oregon case, Brewer case. There were a number of problems with current law dealing with land sales and defaults, and this is the solution to those problems that the real estate section and land use sections of the Oregon State Bar came up with.
Mr. Chairman, I guess this is a question for staff. In a conference committee on a Senate Bill 692, we added some provisions that dealt with foreclosures with cities of bankrupting. I wonder whether that would have, whether we, and that was it. I don't want to complicate things. I think this is fine, but I'm, it had to do with redeeming property that had been subsequently sold, and what the redeemer had to pay, that the purchaser had, like taxes and fees and things. And I just want to make sure that we're not having a conflict with that. We're probably not relating to the same statute, because they were really talking about bankruptcy.
Yeah, I think this is a different
reason. For those purposes.
This does have some provisions in it dealing with what a purchaser can do to avoid default in a land sales contract.
Yeah. Well, I see what they're calling for, the purchase price. Fine, Mr. Chairman.
I wonder if counsel advises if he thinks Section 10 is constitutional.
Take a peek. Section 10.
Counsel are in their own trickery.
Okay, let me go back and look quickly at Section 7 and 8 again.
Well, I would say, I'll let counsel speak for himself, but my answer is that it would be, because what it is doing, Section 7 and 8, would affect something that would take place after the effective date of this bill, and it would impose certain additional requirements in terms of foreclosure proceedings, but it would not eliminate any rights that either party would have under the contract. That's my interpretation.
Or procedural.
Yes.
Rather than substantive.
Right.
I think you're right. There is no...
What about 8? You're talking about 7. 8 is talking about...
Well,
you're
saying that it isn't unconstitutional?
Should not be affected.
I guess my opinion is that it's not unconstitutional because it does not affect rights. It adds requirements, is what it does, to the procedures for foreclosure. And Section 8, of course, says that if somebody's not a party, you can't affect that party's rights by this foreclosure action.
Well, it deals with foreclosures. There is a general misconception that the legislature can never do anything to change a contract that's happened before, and that's not always strictly speaking true. Strange syntax, but I think you understand what I mean. The legislature can't pass an ex post facto law, which is generally interpreted to deal with making something a crime. It wasn't a crime before. Courts frequently interpret new provisions of law not to apply to contracts that were entered into before, unless some specific provision was made. But there is no prohibition against them attempting to, and it's not strictly speaking unconstitutional.
Well, then, would the same analogy apply to changing the right of redemption period?
No, it wouldn't in the mortgage. It wouldn't. Sorry. I'll tell you the distinction, Senator. And by the way, are you aware that we have found an Oregon case that holds...
1896.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was my guess before I knew the case existed, and that's still good law. The difference is that in the situation you just put to us, that a right of redemption is indeed a right, and an existing right, a contractual right, a statutory right, which the period of redemption is, cannot be altered or lessened by legislation. It can only affect prospective mortgages and so forth. So
that's it almost seems to me that that's what we're doing here, is affecting...
Well, you're not affecting any rights here. You are imposing additional duties in terms of how one goes about the foreclosure procedure, and that's perfectly legal.
That's the right of the person who's foreclosing.
Yes.
Being limited then.
Well, not limited, but you're adding burdens. You're adding additional burdens to the person who's foreclosing. And yes, you can do that. The property, the contract vendor, for example, is not being deprived of his right to foreclose. Mm-hmm. The legislature is saying that in order to foreclose, you're going to have to follow certain procedures. Likewise, the contract purchaser is not suffering any loss of rights either. Those two sections really apply to the contract vendor principally, if not entirely. And now, Diana Godwin's here. If I've made any misstatement of which she's aware, she can come up and correct me on the record. Or anyone else here? Brad? Did I make a correct statement as far as you can tell? Okay, Brad Moore says it.
I brought it up because it's very germane to this other amendment we're proposing, and it talks about the inventive default under a contract for conveyance of real property, interest, lien, or claims of a person with respect to the real property by virtue of an assignment, conveyance, contract, mortgage, trust deed, or other lien or claim.
Mm-hmm.
Shall not be affected by the purchaser's abandonment or reconveyance. So we're in effect talking about the same general law.
Well, see, it says, read it. The person's interest, lien, or claim with respect to the real property shall not be affected by the purchaser's abandonment or reconveyance to the seller.
Yes.
That is an existing right, and it's specifically stated in here that right should not be affected by this legislation.
It won't affect passage of this bill, but there does seem to be some difference of opinion among lawyers on the other.
Until the Supreme Court rules otherwise, that's the law of the state. Even if it's an old case. Any other questions or any other problems with this bill? I don't know whether Senator Simmons has probably been involved in land sale contract foreclosure matters, and it is just a mess. They don't teach you in law school how to deal with a land sale contract foreclosures, except in very broad sense. And the first time a lawyer runs into that problem, he has a lot of work ahead of him to try and figure out what is the right way to go. I guess this bill is to try and help lay out a roadmap for that procedure.
They teach you estates about what to do with them.
Right.
Fortunately, that hasn't happened very often up until the last 5 years, and then all of a sudden it's been a plethora.
Is this all right?
I'll sure support the bill because I think it helps me make a point on the other.
On the other hand, you don't know about the other one we're talking about.
Right.
All right. So, okay.
Want me to move it?
Yes. Senator Simmons moves A. and Gross House Bill 2361 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. For the discussion? Call the roll, please.
Rossman.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Cohen.
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye. Carried. 2461 is something that I don't think ought to be a problem. Let's take a look.
Shall I explain it?
Yes.
2461 is a House bill submitted to the request of the Legislative Council Committee. It authorizes substitution of sex-neutral terms, deletions of non-sex-neutral terms, nesting the Oregon revised statutes. One of the things that you'll notice in the staff report, I pointed out in the first subsection of the only section of the bill, it says, in order to carry out the policy stated in ORS 174-115, the Legislative Assembly intends that references in the Oregon Revised Statutes to nouns and pronouns that are not sex-neutral shall be considered reference to the appropriate sex-neutral nouns. There was a staff-raised question about how that would affect Well, there was a bill that the committee considered earlier that would have changed certain, much earlier in the session, changed certain terms to sex-neutral terms, and the committee decided to reject the bill because it would have also changed certain rights and responsibilities in terms of that bill. This subsection may achieve the same thing by directing that the terms in the statutes be interpreted as sex-neutral, and that was the only concern that staff had raised concerning that interpretation. The rest of the section merely allows the Legislative Council Committee to substitute where the substitution is clear and doesn't change the meaning of the statute, and if there is a potential that it does change the meaning of the statute, then they're required to bring in legislation. So the first subsection was the only subsection that caused any comment, particularly one way or the other.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I guess I'm going to ask Brad, are you satisfied that something we ought to do here, from a technical point, is it the way we're doing it now? Do we need anything more?
Well, if sections 2 and 3 would give, subsections 2 and 3 would give Legislative Council statutory authority to do something that currently what they do is they clean up the statutes as they draft bills and they deal with the statutory section. It's policy in that office to change the offensive personal pronouns to sex-neutral terms.
Why do they need a law to allow them to do that?
Because there are a number of sections that hardly ever get amended haven't been amended since 1953. I think that if you pass this bill with subsection 1 in it, you will be having an effect on interpretation of statute that may have the same sort of effect as the bill earlier.
Okay, should we delete? Are you suggesting we delete sub 1? And I guess I'm ready to do that.
I was going to say delete 2 and 3. And then anytime it says his or hers, it means whichever one.
See, the problem is we ran into a major change. Yeah. That when they did that, they came in with that in and I don't know if you were here, Senator Simmons, but it would have materially changed the law in the domestic relations area by doing that. They, in one of the instances we had here, we said, sorry, we're not going to do that on that basis. And so I'd rather just plain leave it alone as long as if we're going to get involved with Legislative Council with that sort of thing happening.
Well, I think it's costing enough now to make changes every time, and then we get into consciousness like this custodian thing or the boat that becomes it. And it's being done over a period of time with no additional cost, and I'd hate to see us spend money just to go through and...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brown.
But when they're in the process of preparing legislation for us and changing a particular section, and they've looked at an adjacent section and see that it's not section 2, this gives them the authority to do that without having had that come out in a formal bill on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
And I think that's desirable. It's part of the process. It's a gradual evolution, and this just speeds it up.
Senator Hemming.
I have a note to myself from, I think it was Kathleen Buffet's testimony, that she anticipates the time of 1 week for one editor while they're doing the 1985 revised edition to clean it up. So as far as Senator Simmons' concern about cost,
a week is quite a bit
in there.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
I guess I'd be willing to support it if we delete sub 1.
I'm not sure I understand sub 1.
Well, that's why I think we ought to delete it. And it specifically says for the purposes of... if you leave 2 and 3...
Okay.
I think that's what Brad is suggesting, that we would, in fact, prohibit something that like came in today. I mean, if we took out sub 1.
Yeah.
So that would be my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Shall be considered references to the appropriate
If they mean he and she.
Well, I mean, I kind of sense that there is no burning desire on the part of the committee for the bill, really.
Well, I don't care about, you know, if you want to table the bill, that's fine, but if you send it out, I would not want to send it out with Sublon in it. So that's all I'm saying.
All right. I mean, if we're going to send it out, I would support you on that. So my question is, does the committee really care that much?
Well, this part of the committee doesn't.
I think the statutory authority for cleaning up the statute is something they don't have, and they think they need it. I agree.
Well, doesn't 174 or 115 do that?
No. That doesn't give them the general authority to do it, only when they're preparing new legislation.
Well, here, let's find out.
This allows them to go through with a computer and search for these archaic glitches and take them out, references.
That's what it does.
That's what they're asking.
Okay.
I don't think we ought to do it because they're asking for it. I think, I just feel like I've been around here almost 10 years now. It'd be nice to see it finished up so we wouldn't always have these little jokes when another one stumbled on. But I don't care a lot.
The only question I would have to Brad, Mr. Chairman, is whether we still needed to sort of say, in order to carry out the policy stated and for purposes of harmonizing and clarifying, do we need the first piece of sub one, or can we just delete all of it?
Bill from Sarah, or from the table. You need House Bill, the amendments to House Bill 2460.
Well, okay.
Representative Kopeski, is the House in session, or what's going on?
The House is preparing for the evening. It's meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Judiciary is meeting now.
Judiciary is meeting now?
Yeah, but your bill isn't. We're in full committee, and I think your bill is in the subcommittee. We'll either finish our work tonight or sometime tomorrow morning.
Okay, well, we're just about to get to your bill, you know.
Okay, do you want me to stay, or I have my staffers in here? Or?
I don't know, because I don't think we're going to need any further testimony. There have been, for the record here, I'm talking about 2685. There have been amendments, apparently, that have been worked out in agreement with the Attorney General's office.
I think we've checked in with the AG's office and the staffers and signed off on the bill.
Are there any? No amendments?
There were no amendments.
No amendments.
Yeah.
And what bill is it in your committee now?
123 will be coming up a little later. I think you had an interest in that one. Did you need to testify on that one?
What was it about?
I'm sorry. I try not to memorize the numbers either. Driver suspension and revocation provision.
No, I didn't need to testify on it.
Okay.
All right. Let's see, how many folks we got here?
I don't need to stick around for
anything. No, but are you upstairs?
Yeah.
In the committee room? In case we need you.
Okay.
You've got a staffer here, and she can run up and get you if we need you. I don't think we'll need you.
Thank you very much.
As long as you take care of all those Senate bills we've sent you now.
Trying to.
Well,
let's see. There are five of us here, aren't there?
We've got.
I remember this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was anything wrong with it.
Pardon?
Is there anything wrong with it?
No. Mm-hmm. Senator Simmons, on this 2598, are you opposed to the bill?
I really don't see where it's needed.
I don't understand it, so I am not.
It apparently is attempting to rewrite contracts.
I'm not for or against it. I just don't understand enough about it. No one testified on it.
It says if you fall behind in your payments. Then they can jack up the cost so the guy can catch back up to where he would have been if he'd been making regular payments.
Well, most contracts provide that you can accelerate.
payments.
In the absence of, or for payment default, or failure to maintain insurance, or for other reasonable cause. And it, again, I'm looking for a joker in it, because I really don't see where it does anything.
There is.
Counsel.
There is a current provision of law, and you'll find a copy of it. It's RS-83660. It's the provides that no provision in a retail installment contract by which, in the absence of the buyer's default, the holder may arbitrarily and without reasonable cause accelerate the maturity of any part or all of the time balance is enforceable. A long sentence. Mostly what it says, the current law says, is 83660, is that you can't accelerate without default. It says this section does not prohibit provisions in a retail installment contract accelerating any part or all of the time balance in the event of sale or transfer, the removal outside the state of a motor vehicle covered by the contract. So under current law, if somebody takes it out of state, takes a car out of state, the provisions can be accelerated and you can collect right away. The bill says a holder may accelerate payment under a term of a retail installment contract in the absence of payment default by the buyer or failure of a buyer to maintain insurance for the benefit of the holder, only if the holder has reasonable cause to believe that any of the following is occurring or that any of the following is imminent in regard to the motor vehicle covered by the contract. Basically, it says that if you fail to keep up your insurance, they can't accelerate unless the person has reasonable grounds to believe that there will be the destruction of a motor vehicle, permanent long-term removal of a motor vehicle from the state, the sale or transfer of a motor vehicle without authorization of the holder, or the intentional depreciation of the value of the motor vehicle in excess of ordinary use of the motor vehicle. And they repeal the section that we were just talking about that says that that a contract can't be accelerated.
Yeah, in other words, in order to require insurance, you'd have to have cause to believe that the vehicle is going to be destructed, not just damaged.
Yeah,
destroyed.
Well,
where does it, is there any mention of insurance?
Yes. It's in line 6.
Okay.
The thrust of the bill is that a holder may accelerate payment for failure to maintain insurance only if the holder has reasonable. I think we've lost it.
Well, we'll. We're just on a kind of a work session without voting. No, we need 5.
Well, I would oppose it. I think that the holder of a lien on a car has the right to have it covered by insurance.
The only thing I have against it is the motor vehicle.
Without going through these conditions, because you're talking about
whether you maintain it or not. You just walk out the door if you get your sticker and call insurance.
Or a truck that's worth $100,000. In order to have any protection at all for the lien holder, you've got to have insurance.
And I sold the car.
And you can't anticipate it's going to be destroyed.
Oh, I talked to him.
Or that he's going to take it out of state or sell it without authorization. It's not depreciated,
do you?
It just defeats the whole purpose of requiring a mortgage and insurance clause.
Jim, I'm once more I appreciate it. The lien holder has a financial interest in the car. He obviously desires to have at least collision insurance, property insurance on that. He can contractually require that. Does this proposal here take away his ability to contractually require it except under these extraordinary circumstances?
That's my understanding.
It also repeals the provision that says that you can't, that a retail installment contract can't provide for acceleration without default. Seems strange that they repealed that too.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have...
Yes, Senator Hanby.
I have problems supporting this bill, so I don't know if...
Which one are we talking about? Same one?
2950.
I think that's the end of that.
Do you want to make a motion?
Move to table.
Senator Simmons moves to table 2958. Call the roll, please.
We're tabling 2958. But
out of courtesy, I'm going to
vote
against it.
Aye. Oh,
that's all right.
Brown?
No.
Are you going to?
Go on.
I'm not going anywhere.
Bailey? Tammy?
Aye.
Hendrickson? Simmons?
Aye.
Wires? Fry?
Aye. Motion fails.
Let's leave it.
Yeah, we'll just... Mr.
Well,
Mr. Chair, since there are five of us, do you think there's support for 2757 the way it is, as late in the session? I really feel rather guilty with the work that's been done in the House committee. And
I'll tell you what. Now, here's the way I look at this bill. I think it's probably an important bill, and I do agree with Senator Wire's concerns about this situation with suspended licenses. I mean, you've probably heard me say this enough time you're getting sick of it, but you know, people with suspended licenses don't have insurance and they keep running into other people and hurting them, and it's a real tough problem. I think the bill is worthy of consideration. I would have some reservation about at this point in time of sending it out in view of...
Well, I would like to send it out as is because of the lateness of the session.
Well,
I think we can pass it.
I do, too.
I was the way back when the original sponsor of the mandatory audit for this bill, and this was Dick Magruder's provision. That's where it came from.
Dick Magruder, did he have a lot of credibility around here?
Well, he was able to tie this bill up without that language in it. I'm not sure if you call that credibility or clout, but it.
Well, now we got somebody from the Motor Vehicles Division here. Come on up. I read in the Cottage Grove Weekly about 2 weeks ago where Tony DiLorenzo was quoted as saying that as of January the 1st of this year, there was a new law that took effect, and the way I read this article, it said that if you don't have insurance, you are in deep trouble. There's no way to get out of it. And I asked somebody about that. I asked Stan Bunn about that the other day, and he said, no, there's no such law as that. Now, can you help me out?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Carl Kruger from Motor Vehicles. What we've been doing through Vanita Howard is just publicizing what we do have with financial responsibility and the insurance laws. And
good.
Just trying to bring it to the public's attention that there is mandatory insurance. So no new law, and what Mr. DiLorenzo was referring to should have been our current law.
Yeah. One thing, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that you would up the number of samplings, the spot checks. I think the spot check is the best thing that can be done from a ministry standpoint. But anyway, just to...
Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to move the bill out, but...
Well, I'll tell you what, let's just wait a bit. Does anybody want to ask Mr. Kruger any questions?
Could we just have a review of the substantive changes this makes? I know it makes two, and that one where they would take off this cosmetic, the court may dismiss. And then the rather extraordinary notion that having certified that you have insurance and then letting it lapse without obtaining something else, you're in a position to be suspended. That's a lot of teeth.
Yeah, two main changes. Takes away the language directly referring to the court dismissing.
Right.
Other substantive change is through the random sample. It makes the random sample, it puts some teeth into the random sample.
Correct.
Right now.
Language and what lines, page?
Page two of the bill, line nine. And probably section four and five.
But right now, through the random sample, a person, when they get the letter from the division, can go purchase insurance. And so the random sample, all it really does is there's some motivation for people to get insurance, but it doesn't really have any teeth in it. And this would make it necessary for that person to certify their insurance at the time that they get the letter.
Right. Is that day good enough?
The date
of receipt. It doesn't say date of receipt. It says date of the letter.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brockman, I would say yes. It's similar to our accident verification, where a person has an accident, and we then ask them to provide insurance that they had at the time of the accident. This would be asking them to tell us what insurance they had at the date of that letter.
The date on the letter.
Date on the letter.
On
yes.
The letter. Not the postmark, but the date of the letter.
The date of the letter.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But there are two other changes in it.
Maybe they can buy backdated insurance.
One change that I should mention is that concerning the random sample, if a person thought that they had insurance, good intentions that they had insurance, that then we could rescind any suspension and refund any $25 reinstatement fee. And that authority, you know, we don't have now.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
on page 2, lines 7 and 8, where it says, or the division has reasonable grounds to believe is not in compliance. Now, does that expand the scope of your random samplees? I thought you could just go out and just ask anyone.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, that portion of the law has not changed. We do have authority to verify up to 10%. We only currently do 1%.
But you currently have grounds.
But we can add other people into it. We can put those other people you're referring to.
And
we do.
But on line 7, it sounds as if that language in dark print expands your authority to sample, but it really doesn't. It just gives you some more direction. Or the division has reasonable grounds to believe is not in compliance. That really doesn't expand your powers. Page 2, lines 7 and 8.
Yeah. I don't believe it does.
Okay. You can go after, you can ask anybody, so if you can ask anyone, you can ask them.
We currently can ask anyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, all right. You want to send us back?
Mm-hmm. I'd love
let's
to.
Let's do.
You want to send
them?
All right. Let's go. Give me a motion.
I so move.
Senator Brockman moves House Bill 2757 for the new pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen? Bailey? Camby?
Aye.
Hendrickson? Simmons?
Aye.
Wires? Fry?
Aye. That carries. Okay, now let's see if we can cooperate with each other on a couple more things here, and maybe we can get out of here. I'd like to know if the committee has any feelings on this grandparents visitation law that we heard the other day, one way or the other.
I'm so glad to see it go out, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
As a grandparent.
Pardon?
As a grandparent and
you
a senior citizen.
You'd like to see it go out. You'd like to see it go out?
I'd like to see it go out. Go to the floor.
I do have some concerns about the broadness of the language. I think some of the testimony that witnesses that we listened to, if you recall, at the close of the hearing on that bill, I forget what number it is.
Well, I know there have been concerns expressed by some other members of the committee.
I think 2428.
Number? No. It's 2428.
2428. There were two sets of amendments. One of the sets of amendments would have made it part of the arbitration proceeding.
Yes.
That's LC-6 amendments would have taken out all of the provisions in the bill and put in new provisions that that arbitration may include but are not limited to disputes involving grandparent visitation and domestic relations suits in certain courts may provide for mediations, including visitation by grandparents, which to some extent would have given them standing in both in the mediation provisions to deal with.
Mr. Chair, I have some real problems, Senator Simmons, with page 3, the language on page 3 about, you know, if there's an employment opportunity outside the state, it certainly takes time to file a petition with the court and go before the court and attempt to explain the employment needs and everything else just because you allow, you know, you're supportive of visitation rights. So I think the language on page 3 I could not support. So I don't know if we want to spend time trying to amend it or not.
Well, let's kind of see how we can do on some others here. I don't know whether Senator Hendrickson is going to get here or not. Now, I can't imagine that somebody, that one senator would be testifying for all this period of time before a committee, but I think that there's a lot of interest in this step-parent bill, and she's kind of the one that put it together with these people, and anyway, I don't know if she's going to get here on it or not, but let's take... let's take a look at 2685.
If I might.
Counsel.
This is the counterfeit trademark bill that Representative Petsky spoke on. They spent some time working on it in the House. It adds additional civil provisions that a person whose trademark is infringed upon, and you need to look at the engrossed, can exercise to protect themselves, adds additional procedures that they can follow, additional authority for the court. It also adds a new criminal penalty for infringement upon trademarks. I do know that Representative Kempetsky's staff contacted the Attorney General's office. I talked with the head of the Consumer Protection Division for the Attorney General's office, and they said this is a new area that they're dealing with, and they're not certain about how the current law adds protection, and they have, in fact, on several occasions for areas that they were sure, weren't sure whether the current law covered it, sought additional authority to do things. There is somebody here from Representative Kempetsky's office if you have any questions.
Well, I may have a sense of how the committee feels about this.
Well, this is aimed at somebody like Nike, whose competitors are, well, I see here, the FBI sees 30,000 pair of socks bearing the counterfeit reproductions of Nike Inc.
That's right.
And I think that's what it's aimed at. There's quite a business now in watches that are shelved. And,
well, those We Are the Children t-shirts was one of the master rip-offs of all time. Yeah.
I'm most supportive of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Let the Attorney General figure it out.
One trip into Tijuana out of, I mean, my heaven.
It's Reagan and Dolls.
And designer watches that are...
Senator Brown, what's your...
I'm supportive. Mm-hmm. I'm just... It's a...
Unless it's well drafted, though, and I have no grounds for knowing that, that's a major area to be tampering with. Now, it doesn't indicate who requested it. It doesn't come from a bar committee in this area. I respect Representative Kempetsky's legal prowess.
Senator Brown is one of the principal sponsors.
I understand that. That's we have a number of lawyers and non-lawyers. But
Well, I had some difficulty, frankly, when I was listening to the testimony and understanding why, if you add our consumer protection law together with the federal laws, and most of this involves interstate shipments,
mm-hmm.
where the problem was with tools that we've already got on the books. And
one thing is to increase damages. Now, I would like to see how that's done. Is how can you, if the damage increased by make it punitive or?
What part are you looking at?
Well, in a summary, it says increased damages. I guess it's top of page 2. It talks in terms of the greater of 10,000.
That one. That's
or the sum of. There's some statutory damages here, and I think that's helpful. Top of page 2 is.
Attorney General's letter said the problem of counterfeit trademarks is nationwide, and Oregon is a port of entry state, probably has more than its share of the problem. The bill appears to be an appropriate response. It's clear in its terms reflect the sensitivity to the due process issues inherent in the ex parte seizure.
It creates a crime, which we don't want to talk about at the present time, I gather. Manufacturing or selling a counterfeit mark.
See, the offense described in Section 6 is a Class C felony if the person committing the offense has been convicted of committing the offense at least once before or caused a death or injury and so forth.
Stage of the game, it's almost, you have to take these things a bit on faith. And it was heavily amended in the House, so obviously they worked it over carefully.
All right.
I move, you pass.
All right. Senator Brown moves House Bill 2685 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Call the roll.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen? Bailey? Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson? Simmons?
Aye.
Wires? Fry?
Aye. All right. That motion is passed. Now, 2670
relates to ways of necessity.
Yeah.
Do you want me to explain it quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
2670 is a bill that relates to ways of necessity. Ways of necessity are statutory ways that people who have landlocked property and no access to that property have of getting away to that property by basically bringing a private condemnation action to condemn an access.
Mm-hmm.
What this bill does is to, and it was amended by the House, and there's a hand-engrossed version of 2670 as amended by the House, is it makes ways of necessity subject, the review procedure for ways of necessity subject to the writ of review procedures from counties. One of the problems that's pointed out in the staff's report is that not all counties have their ways of necessity done by the county governing body. Some of them have, well, all counties have the authority to turn it over to the circuit court to handle the ways of necessity procedures. A writ of review is a procedure that generally lies against county governing bodies and doesn't really lie against circuit courts, so that would create a problem the way the bill is drafted now with how you would appeal from a circuit court. I guess you'd go to it and ask for a writ of review against itself and then decide what it had done.
Yeah. You'll recall Well, if you were here, you'll recall that that was the principal concern raised in the public hearing, was that the just what counsel said. And that was an oversight, I suppose, by the drafter of the thing, and I'm not... I mean, and that's the whole point of the bill, you see.
Yes.
I don't... My recommendation is to table the bill.
My deference to Ed Sullivan, who I know very well, I would just leave it. I'm not going to vote to table.
Okay. Well, God, if I need 5 votes in this committee, I can never get 5 votes in this committee.
That's tabling, that's important.
Well, I mean, we got it in front of us, and I'd like to, you know, I'd...
Okay, I'll support you.
Well, I'll find out if anybody else wants to.
Well, we've got 13 minutes to take it off the table if we do table it, so I'd support table.
We've got a lot of bills we haven't, you know, that are sitting in the committee, and that's all right. So this doesn't make a difference anymore. But if it...
I'll table it. Go ahead.
What is the rest of you think? You want to just leave it alone, or do you want to move it?
Well, if there's something wrong with it, I don't...
Well, it's defective. There's no question
about that. I don't want to be especially responsible for something like that.
The intent is excellent, but...
Yeah, it is. It really is, because I've got a constituent that's right in the middle of one of these things.
But it's so late in the session to try to correct it.
Well, okay. Why don't we...
I'll move the table. You don't know.
Well, I think it's fair to say that there aren't 5 votes to get this bill out here, are there?
No.
You didn't. Everybody would agree on that.
In that case, then I'll move the table.
No, I'm not arguing I'm not asking you to do that. I just want to find out. I want to make sure that there people aren't interested enough that they want to spend some time trying to work it over here. I don't hear any clamor for working it over. It just...
Well, when could we get it back if we did?
We couldn't.
The committee closes down at 7 o'clock, we understand.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when do the people...
I don't know about the House. They might even be meeting tomorrow. Well, let's leave that for the time being anyway. Now, I don't know whether Senator Hendricks is ever going to come back, but I'm going to try to do something with this House Bill 2460, one way or the other. Have you folks had a chance to look at the Dash 3 amendments?
No. Do we have the amendments?
We just got...